You're listening to Proof to Product, and this is episode 2. We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey guys, it's Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. On today's episode, I'm interviewing Sam Kramer, the head boss lady at Near Modern Disaster. Sam got her start in 2009 and amped things up in 2014 when she began selling wholesale and did her first trade show, and she expanded her product line into greeting cards, mugs, notepads, and enamel pins. On today's episode, Sam talks about her process for developing new products, the importance of releasing new products regularly, and how working with sales reps has helped her scale her business. Hey, Sam, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
Of course. So, hey, I wanted to start off by saying that I've really enjoyed watching your growth in your business. You've been really thoughtful about how you entered the wholesale market and how you added new products to your line and how when you started working with reps too. So, first of all, major kudos to you. Thank you.
No, you can keep doing that. That's totally fine.
No, but I'm serious.
Talk about how wonderful I am. Go on.
Well, this is going to be a whole show about how wonderful I am. But no, so let's start at the very beginning. When did you start Near Modern Disaster? And did you always want to design stationery and gift products?
So I actually went to school for photography. I can't take a picture to save my life now, but I was sort of still working in the photography world when I started Near Modern Disaster. It was 2009, and a friend of mine had suggested that I list some illustrations that I had been posting online of, like, all places, LiveJournal. I had been sharing them with friends, and she's like, why don't you list those on an Etsy shop and try to sell them to the general public? And so I did that. It was around Valentine's Day. I said, let's do some cards too. But I was a studio manager for a photographer in New York, and we had extra paper lying around. We had extra envelopes. Like, I never intentionally started a card business, but it just sort of became one, I guess.
Uh-huh. And that was in 2009?
Yeah, so that was 2009. It wasn't for another maybe year that I started actually actively trying to sell to stores, mm-hmm. but it wasn't really – it was very small potatoes. It was just some local shops. They contacted me on Etsy. It was like, hey, how's it going? I sent some very unfortunate all lowercase emails.
Oh, no.
Oh, it was like no sales pitch skills at all. But
that's all right. We all got to start somewhere.
Yeah. But I mean, it took a few years for me to really get a grasp on properly wholesaling because I never intentionally was creating this company. So I wasn't really treating it like a business, mm-hmm. but I didn't understand if I just gave it a little love and did treat it like a business that it could be one.
Right.
And I wasn't happy at my day job. So it made sense to try to focus on it.
I think that story really resonates with a lot of people though. I think that, you know, a lot of businesses are like, at least a lot of the clients I've worked with, you know, they knew they wanted to do something different. They weren't exactly sure what, and they weren't exactly sure how. And so in some ways they felt like they fell into their business, but yet I also feel like there's a purpose behind how we get to where we go. So when did you start taking it seriously as a business? Like, when did you feel like you really ramped it up and became?
Oh yeah. So that was when I met you, basically. I did my first craft fair in Christmas 2011, and someone came up to my booth, and she had worked in the stationery world before. This was in North Carolina. I'd mm-hmm. moved there already from New York. And she said, oh, have you heard of the stationery show in New York City? And I was like, I just moved from there. Are you freaking kidding me? This is a thing. I had no idea. So I walked the show the next year, and I freaked out. I mean, I walked into the Javits Center, and I'd been there for photography trade shows. So right. it was a familiar territory sort of for me. But this was just like, oh, I would be here for myself and not for, you know, this professional photographer that I worked for. And
right.
this was a different world, and it was so scary. And I left within like 30 minutes because I freaked out and came back the next day. Probably had some whiskey in my system to calm myself down and just sort of tried to get an idea of what was happening. Someone who was an alum at the show, Chantel, actually, from Papillon Press, handed me a flyer because she saw me freaking out. And it was a trade show boot camp flyer. And so I went by your booth, met you, hugged you, told you I loved you, I think. And then I just, you know, I realized that there were basically the short of it is that I realized there were resources out there that could help me. And I didn't have to try to make a business myself with no help. I mean, I had read a few books, a few like how to build your creative business thing, but none of them were as specific, you know, to wholesaling, especially wholesaling a greeting card line as the help that I got with Trade Show Bootcamp. And so that was something that really just helped me to take things seriously. And so doing some coursework and walking the show again the next year with a clear head. So I walked in 2012 and 2013, which is, you know, I certainly was taking baby steps. I was scared out of my mind.
Well, Sam, and it was first hard. Of all, I'm going to stop you there because you are not alone, my friend. Like,
oh, no, I know that.
I mean, we've got a whole community of people that, you know, all of us at different points have been really scared in different things that we've done in our business. So I got to say, I actually, like I said in the intro, like, I applaud your slow organic growth. You did things when you were ready. You've invested money in products when you were ready. You started working with sales reps when you felt more ready and you had a base knowledge. I remember when you came, actually before you came to Paper Camp, getting emails from you that had loads of questions, and they were so thoughtful and so just like, it was very clear that you really wanted to take this business seriously and that you wanted to invest your time and resources only in places that were really going to pay off for themselves. And then when you came to camp, you also brought a long list of questions, which I love. I love when that happens because it shows me that you know what you need and we want to make sure you get that information. So, you know, I love your story and thank you for also talking about how we played a small part in your success, because I do appreciate hearing that feedback. But I mean, ultimately, my friend, you did the hard work and you've made this business into what it is today. So let's talk about your work. What inspires you when you're creating your designs and you're creating new products?
Well, when I started out, you know, I was doing a lot of illustrated cards. So I was constantly doodling in a notebook, like on paper, but turning those into drawings on the computer, because all of my work is ultimately drawn digitally. My font is not a font. It's my hand lettered text in Illustrator, my block lettering, and any illustrations are done on a tablet into the computer. But now that most of my cards are text-based, it's a lot easier to really just keep up with inspiration, like throughout the day or week or whenever. And so I have the notepad function on my phone that just is this long list of just absolute nonsense. Probably if anyone opened it, they'd be like, this is a crazy person. What is going on? So a lot of my, you know, a lot of my card ideas just come from conversations with friends. Some of them come from, you know, just maybe like I mishear what someone says. And so it turns into, it just gets me thinking like, oh, a little snippet of something, maybe a snippet of something that you hear in a song or on TV, like, oh, how could you word something differently from that and make it into a greeting card? And also, anytime I'm doing long drives, I keep that notepad on my phone open to like the speech to text function. So it's just me talking. And it's, I mean, it is garbage. When you go back and read a lot of it, you know, there's a lot of like, what? No. But it's sort of like this stream of consciousness type thing. And really those longer drives, I don't do those very often. But whenever I do, it is like, that's really the only time that I'm sitting down and trying to brainstorm a lot of ideas at once. Because mostly it is just little ideas here and there. And then when I do, I create all of my product, I like to sit down with those ideas and go through them and weed out the ones that are terrible.
I was just going to ask, what's your process for that? Because I'm a big fan of just brain dumping too and like getting it all out of your head, even if it's total nonsense. But
oh, yeah.
But then how do you then take that next step to, like, you know, really honing in and getting rid of things that make no sense or don't fit with the line and then deciding what to move forward on?
I feel like I look over the list and some of them are ideas that I'm like, oh, well, you know, you really have something too similar to this, or this might be too similar to someone else's card, or this might be too similar to just like, maybe I have an anniversary card, but it's a love card and it's just like, you don't need two of that same type of thing. So I go through that list every so often. I mean, maybe I release a few times a year. So I release a new product a few times a year. So I'm that's my goal, is to just make sure that that list gets honed down by the time that I get to that release time. So I, you know, I look at the list and I pull things out and I'm like, okay, these are the things that definitely are like the closest to concrete finished ideas. And then okay. I total them up. And if those ideas come out to, you know, 20 cards, that's great, because that's about how many I'm going to do in a release.
Right.
So I just make sure that, you know, do I need more birthday cards? Do I need more wedding cards? You know, I try to fill the areas that I need help in, or that I need to, you know, beef up the
your line,
what I'm offering, you know, because especially different times of year, obviously I'm not going to be releasing new Mother's Day and Father's Day cards at the stationery show in May, you know? So in fall, I'm making sure that I have some brainstorming on those type of cards, and those are the ones that I'm going to take to print.
Do you ever, like, I've talked with a lot of different people about their styles for creating their work, and like, I know I've talked with Claudia in the past, and she'll do a bunch of batch, Claudia from Fig 2 Design, she'll do a lot of batch stuff where she'll design a whole bunch of things at one time, but she'll kind of wait and release it later on a later schedule. Like, will you at Mother's Day, Father's Day time, or like holiday time, when you're in that mode, will you brainstorm a whole bunch of things that you may not touch for a little while until you're ready to actually like start working on that release?
I don't ever take them to the finish line. Like I don't finalize the card design in the computer laid out, but I keep it on the list. You know, like I may brainstorm some Mother's Day and Father's Day cards right now, but they're going to remain in that notepad on my phone until fall.
Right.
Because that's when I'm going to. So for me, it's, yes and no, I guess. I mean, it's not maybe as thoroughly as someone like Claudia is probably doing it, or someone else who is designing a lot of product at once. I know that a lot of people have mentioned that that's a really great idea for designing holiday cards around the holidays. When you're in the holiday spirit, you know, you don't want to be designing Christmas cards in April, but that's what we're all doing. And it's a lot of people have given me the advice, you know, design those in fall. And yeah, you're not going to see any new holiday cards from me probably until summer. So it's just one of those things that I felt, you know, maybe I should have been pushing for this time of year, but I didn't do my brainstorming enough back in December for those type of cards.
And that's okay. I didn't mean to like call you out or say that your process is correct. I just think it's important to show that different people have different processes for the brainstorming and for the execution, and then, you know, deciding what really does fit within the line. I mean, there's different ways you can handle this from all sides. Let's talk a little bit about adding new product categories to your line, because you've added mugs and pins and a few other things so that you're not just doing greeting cards. What advice do you have for people who are considering expanding into new product categories?
I think just make sure that you really do your research on pricing of those items and quality. You know, I only had greeting cards when I did the stationery show in 2014. And when I came back the next year, I knew that I wanted more product offerings, but I didn't really do enough, give myself enough lead time, I guess is the proper wording of that. I really didn't give myself enough lead time with certain items. For instance, my coffee mugs, I made about $1,000 mistake on. And I went with a cheaper manufacturer, and it showed. And those mugs were garbage. And I needed to find a different manufacturer and get rush shipping. And, you know, you make some mistakes and you throw some product out. But hopefully if you give yourself enough time and do your research on pricing and check out samples from different vendors. You know, for instance, I wanted to release enamel pins for about a year before I released them.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't find someone where the pricing was what I needed it to be. And, you know, to work for the wholesale model, to work with sales reps, because they're taking a commission off of that as well. So, you know, you have to think about all of these different things. It's not just, oh, that price seems okay for now.
Right.
You need to make sure, you know, all of these different items. So
I'm so pleased to hear you say that, because I think we're creative entrepreneurs, right? So people get very excited about creating new and, you know, different product categories, or they see other people doing different things. And it's like, oh, I want to do that too, which is awesome, because if you can make it work, it's great to leverage what's already working. But you got to look at the numbers, and you got to make sure that the margins are there, and that you're considering the packaging, and you're considering if you're selling this to the retail market, or are you selling it to the wholesale market? And, you know, just does this work all the way around?
Oh yeah. So, I mean, there are certainly product categories that other people are carrying that I have just not gotten into for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, another huge thing is storage. Think about storage. Do not start making coffee mugs if you're working out of a 100 square foot studio in New York City. Like, don't stop. Stop. They take up my entire garage, you know?
Like, oh my gosh.
They take up like one car portion of my 2-car garage. That's the way I have it worded in my catalog too.
That's, I'm like, funny.
Hey, this is where the mugs live. Yeah, it's so, needless to say, you're not going to see mugs from me again in the future after the ones, you know, the ones that I have now, I'm fine with, but I probably won't be releasing new ones.
But those are things that people may or may not think about beforehand. So I love that you mentioned that too.
A lot of people, you know, another product territory or product area that people want to get into is, you know, gift wrap. And there are so many things you need to think about there, not just storage of the product, but that's an awkward item to ship as well. And you know, mugs, you have to think about breakage. There are so many things to think about. For me, a lot of it does come down to, of course, the pricing and the quality, but it really comes down to storage now. Like, that's been a huge deal for me with thinking about adding new products on this year.
And logistics. I'm glad you brought up the logistics of shipping that stuff too, because you're right, gift wrap gets tricky. So let's talk about sales reps. You've been working with sales reps for a little while. How did that relationship or those relationships come to be, and how has that enhanced your business?
I mean, I think the question is like, how has it not enhanced my business? I have no idea. I mean, honestly, it's really hard to like remember what life was like before working with sales reps. It's been just such a great opportunity for me. I started working with a rep group just after my second stationery show. So that was 2015. And, you know, just 3 months later, they exhibited my work at New York Now. Mm-hmm. And New York Now is an amazing trade show. I mean, it covers the entire gift industry. So you're not just dealing with stationery buyers. You're dealing with people who might own smaller boutiques or larger stores. And I mean, it's everything under the sun. And they might see your product, but they might not be a type of buyer who would come to just the stationery show. So you're getting in front of a different audience, and it's expensive. It's very expensive to do that show. And so that's something that I never in a million years thought that I would be taking on, you know, I never thought that I would be selling at that show myself.
Yeah.
And so having the reps has been really great, you know, because they're taking my work to those shows. Mm-hmm. And New York Now is twice a year as well. So it's not even the cost of it. It's the idea that, you know, it's the energy that it takes to do a trade show. So right. it is nice to have them doing that. But it is also, you have people who are basically out in the world, like boots to the ground, selling your product.
Yeah.
And they are able to contact so many more people than you are, because that is the primary job. Like, they're not dealing with the manufacturing of the product. They're not dealing with, you know, packaging it up. They're not dealing with creating the new product. They're only dealing with selling it. And so you have these very specialized forces, you know, working in your favor.
Yeah.
And
they also have a larger reach, like you mentioned. Like, they're in their own territories. They've got relationships, and they're exposing you to a new group of buyers that you wouldn't have maybe otherwise met.
Oh, yeah. There are definitely buyers. I mean, there are buyers out there that do not order direct from lines.
Right.
They only order with sales reps because they don't have enough time to handle, you know, looking at 25 different people's things, like, as they come in.
Yeah.
But they can have a sales rep come and show them 25 lines at once.
Yeah.
And they can make this one appointment and buy all of these cards for like the entire season. And it works out really great because you may have never been able to build up a relationship with that buyer.
Right. To get beforehand. Them in the door yourself. I agree. I will say too, reps work hard. I mean, I'm close friends with several reps and they, you know, their appointments can be 3 to 4 hours. Like they're there, like truly showing the lines that they represent and like giving the backstory on how these things came to be. And I think they can be a really great addition to a product-based business. But I will say that there is a lot that you need to prepare or that you need to have in order. Like you need to have your house in order before you start reaching out to reps. And so what did you prepare or what did you have to get ready when you started working with reps?
So I was approached by an independent rep, you know, when I did my first trade show in 2014. Mm-hmm. And I just told her I was not ready. Mm-hmm. You know, I had been wholesaling for a couple of years at that point, but it was not, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it was not properly. And so I really count like, you know, the 2014 National Stationery Show as like the beginning of my legitimate wholesale business.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to make sure I got all my ducks in a row. I needed to know that I understood how to maintain my inventory, that I knew what to expect, like what products were buyers responding to the most, you know, what were the quickest items to move? How long did it take me to get new product back on the shelves? How long did it take me to package that product? And how long did it take to package up the actual orders to ship? And, you know, it just, you need to get a real, I mean, I know a lot of people want to work with sales reps just to alleviate that, you know, that marketing time, I guess they, you know, but it's like sales reps don't cover the entire United States. It's not like you will ever, I mean, there may be people out there that have reps in every territory imaginable, but for the most part, you're still going to have areas of the country that you need to market to yourself, but your reps can handle the bigger territories. You know, I mean, I have 75 or 80 stores in California alone, and I have two amazing sales reps that take care of that territory. And I've had friends go to San Francisco and they're like, I saw your cards in every store, every store.
They're doing their job over there. That's awesome.
You know, they're doing it. They're doing it right.
Yeah. So I'm going to interrupt you real quick and just to recap for the listeners. At Paper Camp, we talk about how important it is to regularly release new product and more importantly, to get on our industry schedule of releases so that you're releasing on the same cycle and you're releasing the correct products when the buyers are actually buying. Was this challenging for you?
I think that it was a little more challenging than I expected it to be. It was one of those things I was like, I got this. I can totally release some Mother's Day cards and Father's Day cards, you know, later in the year. I can release some Valentine's around the holidays, around the Christmas holidays, you know, later in like October, September. I thought that I'd be able to do it. That first year, you know, my initial releases were certainly very small, maybe only like 6 cards at a time.
Okay.
But it was still something. But definitely as I got more into it, as I realized, you know, you need to be brainstorming more product. I think that was the idea. I didn't really realize, you know, I was like, I have 100 cards. Why do I need to keep doing more? But you need to keep things fresh for the buyers. I mean, buyers always want to know what's new.
Yeah.
That's the first thing they ask you at a trade show. That's the first thing they ask you when they email you. Is there anything new? Is there anything new? So I think that, you know, like I was mentioning earlier, it is something that it's a little difficult to do out of season. So maybe take that opportunity around Mother's Day and Father's Day right after the holidays, that holiday season passes, and start brainstorming for those holidays then.
Yeah.
And then hold those designs until the next year. But I think, yeah, I do think it was a little more difficult than I expected it to be. But certainly over the years, you know, I did also wait a while, you know, to really get into that wholesale market. So I knew what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that the schedule was there. I knew when people were expecting things. I think the biggest shock for me was that what is considered the general buying schedule for like boutique stationery companies, boutique, you know, stores buying from us, it's even earlier for those big box stores.
Oh yeah.
So that was something that it took me a while to realize. I was like, oh, I want to contact this big box store with my holiday cards and it's May and everyone's like, they bought their holiday in March.
Yeah.
You know, or whenever it was, you know, I knew that, oh, so I need to, if I want to think about releasing to those companies, then I do need to even plan earlier.
Yeah. It's definitely a different launch strategy or release schedule for sure. Okay, you recently moved your home and business to a completely different state, which is a huge undertaking. And how did you prepare for that?
Don't remind me.
Well, you survived and you lived to tell about it. So how did you prepare for that? Like, what did you do in advance? And how long were you shut down for the move?
I was not shut down at all.
So, oh, wow.
Number one, I'm a crazy person. Number two, so yes, I moved from North Carolina to Florida in fall, well, Thanksgiving weekend of 2015. And so I had the holiday at, you know, my disposal there, I guess. And I don't believe that I was actually down any days. You know, I packed the cards onto a truck and I'm pretty sure I was up and running, you know, that next week. It's something that, you know, I prepared like crazy. I mean,
yeah,
when
explain
I
that a little bit more. What did you do ahead of time before you moved?
So when I was living in North Carolina, there's a really amazing craft art community there. And a couple of the women that I knew were helping me package orders and just package my cards, you know, sleeving cards. I feel like that is 50% of our business is just putting the damn cards into plastic sleeves. So I had these amazing women who were helping me. And basically I realized, you know, a couple of months before I was moving that I had no idea what I was going to do when I moved to Florida, as far as having someone who was going to package the cards for me, you know, who was I going to use for help? And so I sort of freaked out and overcompensated and had those lovely women package up my entire inventory.
Wow.
So that was 60 to 70,000 cards.
Wow.
And so our first moving truck was just my office stuff. And yes, I said first because we moved over the course of multiple weekends, but I only moved one of those. My husband went back and had to move the actual house things with his brother. But we moved my office stuff down, and because that was the priority. I mean, the priority, both my husband and I work remotely, and well, both of us work from home. He works remotely for a company. And it's one of those things that we knew this was the priority. We knew the priority. We were moving. You know, I started out in New York, moved to North Carolina, had a little bit more space there. And then we bought a home in Florida. So I have two offices or two bedrooms of that house are devoted to my work. So I have a stock room and then an office computer room. And we knew we had to get the stock room up and running or else I couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
So that was just our immediate priority. And, you know, I thought we've got all these cards packaged. We're going to be totally fine.
Yeah.
We have 60, 70,000 cards packaged, you know. My bestsellers, I had, you know, extras of those, you know, maybe 500 of something, but a couple thousand of another card. And then within about a week of being back in, or back in, I say back in Florida because we're both actually originally from there. Within a week of being in Florida, one of my cards, which says "You're a goddamn magical unicorn," which it's been my bestseller since 2014. So I should have maybe expected it to get some exposure at some point. But it was featured in a BuzzFeed gift guide for people who love swearing. And it was trending on BuzzFeed for days. I mean, last I checked, I think it had over 3 million views.
Wow.
But you know, we had 2,000 to 3,000 of that card packaged and we blew through those immediately. I had my entire family in my house packaging cards, and they don't swear. So that was extra funny, but you know, it was a real like grassroots operation for it start. We had folding tables. It was pretty ridiculous. But
oh my gosh. The timing of that is crazy though. A week after you moved the feature.
And so that's something, you know, my business is primarily wholesale. I mean, I do work mostly with stores. This is, you know, this is just direct to customer sales on Etsy, which is not something that was a huge territory for me. I've had that Etsy shop since 2009. It's where I started, but it really was not, you know, that really wasn't my focus. My focus was not the direct to customer sales.
Right.
And yeah, so this really changed that, you know, and it's been, you know, the sales have not been BuzzFeed level since then, but they've certainly been much higher since that feature.
How interesting. So that really kind of changed the trajectory of your business on the retail side. So prior to that, you'd been mainly wholesale, and wholesale is still the largest chunk of your business. Is that what you'd say?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's still.
And then retail's more.
Yeah.
Of just like
I mean, we're still sending out retail orders every day, but you know, dollar for dollar, of course, it's nothing compared to wholesale.
Wow. That sounds like a stressful process with the move and the BuzzFeed. I mean, it's all good stuff, right? You moved to bigger space, you've got a studio, you've got the BuzzFeed feature, but like that's a lot to handle. That's a lot to juggle in a short amount of time.
It was a lot right when we moved. But luckily as I did mention, we were back in Florida where our families are from. So we had the luxury of having them available. I mean, I could have just seen myself on Craigslist trying to hire some like teenage girls to come package cards or something. I'm so grateful I didn't have to do that. So.
I was going to say, I love the foresight of having the people that already knew you, already had been working with you, knew what you needed done. That was very smart, in my opinion, of having them do as much as they could and getting that stuff squared away. Because having – I will say that one of the things about wholesale that everyone needs to realize is that you are expected to keep inventory. You are expected to have stuff on hand. Yeah. And so if you're having to pack and pull and, you know, like sleeve and do all that stuff with every order that comes in, it does become quite a time suck and it, you know, it can slow down the process. So – anyhow, thanks for sharing that story, Sam. I know it was probably a little traumatic to relive, but it was good to hear. So tell me, what's next for Near Modern Disaster?
Well, so I just signed on with a distributor in Canada, which is pretty exciting because I've sold, you know, I sell in about 250, 300 shops across the United States, but I only really had about 10 to 15 shops in Canada that were selling my products. Uh-huh. And they were all people who had found me most likely at a trade show. I feel most likely at a trade show, maybe on Instagram or some sort of social media. Mm-hmm. But I just started working with a distributor, which is now an opportunity to get into more shops across Canada, you know, get my brand out there more.
That's awesome.
Also, I feel like, you know, as I mentioned, I had the lovely ladies in North Carolina who were packaging cards for me. I do have help here now. That's not just my family, which is great. But, you know, I have a girl here and she's amazing. And she packages so quickly that it puts me to shame because she's a young person. She's 24. I feel like 1,000 years old compared to her. But but that's my advice. Find a young person to package your cards for you. The next step for me is, after many years of touting the fact that I went to school for photography, I have decided to hire someone to photograph my products.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's a huge step.
Yeah. I'm one of those people that's been able, because of the nature of my work, I have been very fortunate to be able to get away with never photographing anything. Mm-hmm. My catalogs don't even have photographs in them.
You've got, well, let's be clear. You've got digital thumbnails and you have digital images, but it's
not they're digital images and my cards are all created. It's basically, you know, it's my Illustrator imagery. So but I don't have, you know, staged photographs.
Right.
I will take photographs every now and again and post them on Instagram just with my cell phone. But I realized, you know, I do want some of those nicely staged photographs that you could get a professional postcard printed, you know, send out as a mailer.
Yeah.
Or use them to try to contact media, which is something that I've never really done.
Yeah.
So I think what's kind of in the future for me is really just like realizing that the way I've been operating now is maintaining. And I really do want growth. And I have been very scared because that involves trusting other people to help you and delegating. And this is something that you and I have talked about a lot before.
We have.
And I've done a lot of reading on how to delegate. But it's something that, you know, I mean, I know everyone struggles with this. And
they do. I was just going to tell you, you're not alone.
It's easy to find someone to package your product, but and then a step up from that to send out your orders. And then a step up from that to help, you know, contact stores or deal with your wholesale, you know, just back and forth. But there are certain areas that I just have not really explored yet. I've never tried to contact the press. for anything.
Yeah.
You know, I've never tried to get an item featured in a magazine or, you know, contacted editors just to get them, not even to get featured, just to let them know who you are. You
right.
know, this is something that I've never really done marketing. And so I'm going to hire someone to do that. And
that's awesome.
These are, you know, just all of those things. I feel like I'm going to try to take more off of my plate so I can use the pool that is attached to the house that I bought in Florida. And not do work on the weekends.
I like that that's your reward.
And using my reward. I was like, I would like to swim in my damn pool. Thank you.
Hashtag life goals. Yes.
It's so sad that I'm like, I'd like to swim. And everyone's like, but you have a pool. And I was like, I don't have time.
I don't get to do that. No, I'm glad that you're taking a look at what you can offload. I'm glad that you're taking a look at some ways to add visibility to your brand. I think that what you're going through right now is definitely something that a lot of people go through. And the other thing is, as small business owners, we wear a ton of hats, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
We're doing the books, we're doing
the
product
development.
I look
terrible in hats too, so, you know.
But it's hard to relinquish that control because you don't, sometimes too, the hardest part is telling somebody else what you want the end results to be. And sometimes you just can't even control those end results either. So, anyhow, I think it's awesome that you're offloading the photos because, too, those photos can be used on so many different things. Press, marketing, your catalogs, your promo postcards, all of it, your website, like just so many places.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of areas, you know, that I feel that are – it's not even like I'm not offloading it because I know there are a lot of people who don't want to offload certain aspects of their business because they love doing it so much.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you're never going to offload creating the product unless
right.
you're licensing someone else's work to help you, you know, unless you're doing a subline or something. But, you know, I mean, if you love packaging orders, like figure out some other Zen shit you can do. Like don't get someone to pack your orders and then like, you know, do something else. But
Well, especially from a cost perspective, I mean, time is money and you can pay somebody $10 an hour to package cards for you and you can use that hour to do something that's going to earn you more than $10 in your business. So,
right. And that's,
you know,
I feel like that's the way I justify a lot of things in my life. Like, oh, am I going to do that? Am I going to buy this? Am I going to, you know, spend money on this service? What would my time be worth if I had someone else do this for me?
Right.
And it's like, I don't cut my own hair. Why would I? I did in college, but I don't cut my own hair anymore.
Mistake
number
one.
So why would I try to do something that should be someone else's job?
Right.
You know, like
right.
bookkeeping or marketing or anything else. And then it's just from the cost perspective, of course, you know, it is the lower totem pole items, like the packaging of the cards and the orders, like that is something that everyone should be offloading that. Everyone. If you don't think you can afford to, you can. You don't know what you're missing. Offloading the packaging of the cards, I feel like, except in dire circumstances, I have not packaged a card since like April of 2015.
Wow.
So it's been 2 years and it's been magical and wonderful.
I think too, it's always good to have goals of what the next thing you want to offload is. So like if people are just starting out and hiring somebody to help package their stuff isn't in the budget or in their timeline or, you know, it just logistically doesn't work. Like knowing that that may be your next step or deciding whatever your next step is, I think it's always good to have that at the front of your mind to say, okay, the next person I'm going to hire or the next thing I want to get some help on is this. And then, you know, kind of setting some parameters around that of like, what will it take to get there?
I think that's really good advice because that is something that I never started thinking about until maybe a month or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why I am now actively working with a photographer because I just sat down and was like, look, you gotta offload more things. So where can you start? And that was it. So I do think that without sitting down and actually planning out the order in which I would be hiring more people, I may still be sitting here going, I'll take pictures with my cell phone.
Yeah. But, and I know it can sound overwhelming too, to like list out all the different people you would bring onto your team. Like, cause that can be like, you know, that can be paralyzing to the point where people don't want to do anything. Right. So break it down to one person. Like if you had the time and money and ability to hire somebody else, who would that person be and what would you have them do? I love it. I love that you're hiring a photographer. I can't wait to see the photos when they come out. Where can people find you online, Sam? Where can they socialize with you?
Oh my God, I'm like all over the internet, you guys. No, so I'm primarily on Instagram. Yeah. My Instagram name is Modern Disaster, so no near. But I'm Instagram/Modern Disaster, Twitter/Modern Disaster, and also Facebook/Modern Disaster.
Nice. We'll include those in the show notes too.
I do have a website that mostly just links to Etsy, but my website is nearmoderndisaster.com, and my Etsy shop is nearmoderndisaster.etsy.com.
Awesome, Sam.
If you want to buy all my things, feel free. It's totally fine with me.
So. I'm heading there now. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Sam. It's always great to talk shop with you and to hear what you're up to. Best of luck with all these new transitions.
Thank you. Thank you.
Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.